Welcome to Dead Man's Party. Nostalgic reviews from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. With your hosts, Chris, Alex, and the Ghoul. Who could ask for more? Don't run away, it's only them.
Here we fucking go.
Woo!
It's Dead Man's Party. We're back, and we are out for justice. My name is Al, and I'm here with the chicken shit fucking pussy asshole, Chris. What's up, man?
Hey, yo, fuck nuts!
Yeah, we're looking for Richie, but before we look for him, we gotta hang with the guy who takes sex selfies with Polaroids while saying cheese, the Ghoul. What's up, Pat?
Eddie, you got the balls? Eddie, you got the balls? Huh?
You're nothing without that fucking badge and that gun. Oh, yeah, this is Out for Justice. This is Steven Seagal's fourth feature film, 1991. Director John Flynn, written by R. Lance Hill, starring Steven Seagal, William Forsythe as Richie, Jerry Orbach, Joe Champa. These other people, I'm trying to see who's... Oh, Gina Gershon. Let's just start doing notables, because this is getting really tiring. That's about it. I don't know if anyone else is really all that famous.
Michael Rooker is uncredited. He's one of the guys in the book.
Yeah.
Okay, so apparently he is not.
What?
Oh, really?
Or if he is... Okay, well, then it's someone else. Okay, so... No. The guy from Brother... what's the Will Ferrell movie?
Step Brothers?
Oh,
John C. Reilly. Yeah, I saw that.
He's actually not. He said, I don't know why you guys keep saying that. I am not in that movie. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, he's he's a notable face. You wouldn't see him. But our guy, Kane Hodder, is a bit player in the end.
Yep.
But we know Kelly Jo Minter is here because there's a bunch of hookers and pimps.
He's in there.
So they're staking out this... I kind of forgot what they were even doing in the beginning, but they're staking someone out.
Staking out, pimp.
No, they weren't staking out the pimp, were they? Weren't they supposed to do something else?
No, I think they just caught that while they were doing a stakeout for something else.
Oh, no shit. Fuck.
Right, and he blew the whole cover and ruined everything. These guys spent months planning this thing, and he can't control his feelings. He sees a pimp smack this... He goes, bitch, I ain't a fucking telephone company, a long distance, whatever he says.
You have a condom?
He goes, what, you don't work for me no more? And she turns to her friend and goes, yeah, didn't I just say I was going to get his money? And he goes, what? Yo, bitch, I don't work for the phone company. I don't do this shit long distance. Bring your motherfucking ass here. Do I look like I just fell off a turnip truck, bitch? And Gino's watching, and he starts slapping her around, and Gino can't take it. Bobby tries to stop him, but Gino's like, nope.
Nope. He cannot be controlled. He beats the shit out of this pimp.
She goes, I'm pregnant. And he goes, what? You pregnant? You let some trick get you pregnant? Ain't you ever heard of rubber? And when he says rubber, dude, he unloads a right cross on her face like you would not fucking believe. Oh. Dude, I'd have been on the ground from that punch.
He beats the fucking bag out of her. Holy
and
shit.
I, that's not
oh supposed my God.
To be funny, but I laugh my fucking ass.
Dude, no, yeah, it's not supposed to be funny, but holy shit, he beats living shit out
and
of
that,
her.
And that, what's crazy is that shit happens, or at least it used to.
Oh, yeah.
I mean... I never understood, not that I'm in that world, but I never understood why hookers worked for pimps, because they basically take all their money.
Yeah.
Protection. I guess it's not like if you just try to go be a hooker on the street with nothing, you will get fucked up. So the pimp protects the girls
or
something like that.
Yeah, but then you only probably get like 20% of what they pay or something.
But you don't have a long career if you don't have a pimp. Like you don't
career.
Yeah, it doesn't go on a long time. Like, something happens, like, you know, shady shit. You'll walk out of the room with a John, and people will be there waiting to, you know, take your shit and whatever. Like,
so if you work for a pimp, does it come with, like, a 401k plan and shit?
It comes with some securities or whatever.
Vacation time.
The pimp does do things, like, for sure. And also, they just might be out there doing something, then the pimp just takes control of them, and if they don't, the guy will say, I'll cut your throat right now, you don't be my bitch, you know, whatever. So
yeah,
they have no choice. It's not like well, I'm just gonna do this because this guy who does nothing deserves, you know, 40% of my money.
That's just wild that people live that way, man. God.
Oh yeah, it's horrible.
Just constant living in fucking constant fear.
Yep, every minute, every second.
Jesus.
There's a lot of that in this movie, like a lot of this is very lived in, like,
oh yeah,
the way you like see people like that in that lifestyle, it's like, how the fuck do you get involved in the shit? And also, yeah, how do you live in it? Like, it's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Also, though, how about the fucking in the addition to the pimp shit, when he throws him through the fucking windshield and then the freeze frame into the title?
Yeah, with him looking at the camera.
Oh, so fucking awesome.
Yeah, so Gino and his guys, they, you know, they got the pimp up against the wall, and the pimp's like, you what, motherfucker? He's like, you like to beat up on women, is that it? Beat me up, asshole. And he's like, oh yeah, that's right, you a bad motherfucker, huh? I know where you live, you stupid motherfucker. I will fuck your wife and kids. And that's all Gino had to hear.
That's
I will
it.
Fuck your yep. wife and kids. Gino grabs him, does that over-the-shoulder arm break, smashes his head through the side window of the car, and then throws him over the trash cans. And then the pimp's like, Gino, you son of a bitch! Like, why would you go back for more after that right. guy just did that to you? Gino flips him upside down, and the pimp goes through the windshield like that windshield is made out of fucking paper mache, dude. He goes right fucking through it, and then the freeze frame of Seagal through the windshield, and it says, Steven Seagal.
Out for justice.
Absolutely fucking phenomenal.
That was fucking on point, dude. That freeze frame and then the out for just. Oh my God.
Yeah, the ridiculousness in this movie is great. Like, there's even a moment where Richie's showing these guys the money he has in a safe in a floor, which his fat ass could never go down in and get. Like, he definitely has to have guys. Like, let's just talk about this main guy, William Forsythe as Richie.
You, yes.
There's so much to say.
God damn.
The most, he is more unpleasant to look at than Sandman was in Death Warrant. Something about, like, no offense to anyone struggling with their weight or anything, but him being so porky and his fat face and that belly at the end when he had the gun to his head, he is so disturbing. He's so irritating to look at with the hair and the mustache and the fucking teeth.
Yeah, he's just like he the only way he gets like anything he wants is through money. Like, no one wants to fuck him because he's him. They only fuck him because he's paying them. Like, and that's, like, if you think about it, realistically, that's a fucking sad quality. Like, if you gotta pay to get fucked, like, you're a fucking, yeah.
Right, you should be such a gangster, you have women. Like even bikers.
He's got that whole club that his sister runs. He could pick any of those girls. They would do it no problem.
Right, right.
He is a godsend in this movie. He is a filthy, fat, sweaty, gap tooth, mustache, shitbag.
He's such a piece of shit.
And he plays an even better white trash role in the Rob Zombie, the first Rob Zombie Halloween, when he's the stepdad in that opening scene.
Oh, God.
Like, you cannot be more a bigger piece of scum than he is in that Rob Zombie Halloween movie.
He just fucking oozes. Like, it's funny, too, seeing him try and play like an Italian mafioso, because yeah. Granted, I've seen him before. Like, I mean, I know him from, like, you know, Flat Top and Dick Tracy.
Oh yeah, remember that?
Yeah. Well,
have you seen Deuce Bigalow, male gigolo, with Rob Schneider?
Oh, very.
He plays a cop in that. He's actually pretty funny in that.
Well, he's also like the secondary villain to Mads Henriksen in Stone Cold. He's good in that. But also, like, I love him in like Devil's Rejects, because he's like that like unhinged sheriff.
Yes. Yes.
So, like, it's tough to see him, like, he's a good mix of, like, he could play the good guy, but also a bad guy, but this is, like, he is just a fucking piece of shit. Like, When he guns that fucking lady down in traffic.
The woman in the car. Dude.
After that, I was like, that's when I texted you, Chris. I was like, holy shit, this guy is a piece of shit. Like, oh my god. Scumbag.
Yeah.
But it's like so fucking enjoyable.
Yeah, they're just driving and the fucking woman honks her horn and says, can you move the goddamn car? He gets out and the woman says, what the hell's the matter with you? And he walks over there. She calls him an asshole and he goes, I'm an asshole. He puts that revolver to her fucking dome, dude. God. Blows her fucking brains out.
Well, first he pulls her hair and pulls her head out of the window.
Out of the car,
blows her brains out. And that shows you right there, he is completely fucking unhinged.
Yes.
He doesn't give a shit about anything. He's a psychopath living in his own world. No rules apply to this guy.
Well, before he did that, he was literally smoking crack.
Yes,
smoking a crack pipe in the car.
Well, the best part about this, so this movie has one of the tropes that like a few of these movies have. Works really well is it takes place all in one day, which I think really, really works to the advantage of this movie, because like the amount of shit that he fucking does, I was like, there's no way that dude does this shit and like the next day he's killing someone, because like
I was so glad you pointed that out to me yesterday, because as many times as I've seen this movie, I just don't think I ever really even thought about that this all takes place in the span of less than 24 hours.
Yeah.
But it does, and it's awesome.
Prequel to 48 hours. 24 hours, colon, 48 hours.
24 hours, colon, out for justice.
24 hours, colon, 48 hours, colon
out for justice.
Out for justice.
Oh, my God. 24 hours. Yeah, that's what this should have been called.
Oh, fuck.
I guess the beginning of the movie, so Seagal, when he was doing the pimp thing, he was talking to his buddy who was just uneasy in the car with him. It was his partner and best friend, Bobby. And later on, Bobby is in front of a store with his wife and kid, and this dude just gets out of the car in broad daylight, pulls the trigger about 5 or 6 times.
Again, right in front of a produce stand.
It's always with the fucking produce. Yeah.
It's unreal. These guys hate fruits and vegetables, man.
Oh, yeah. They hate it. Then he, like we said, pulls the woman's head out, blows her brains out. Seagal heads over there. Oh, my God. And I guess we're supposed to get a bit of, like, backstory or some kind of character depth where his son wants to play catch. But his dad is just always too busy with his job, and he's not going to do it. Like his son seems like he's so depressed and whatever. Like, that's all we get. Just like this dog in this movie. Like, this is supposed to be something where, like, so this guy throws a dog out of a car in a plastic bag.
So random.
Who would even do that? Why would you not just pull over and throw him off a bridge into a river? Like, who just slows down in the middle of the street, then decides this is a good spot?
I guess the guy was being semi-humane, I guess. Like, he didn't want to kill the thing, so he threw it out.
He's not a complete piece of shit, because he actually stopped the car.
No, yeah. He is, because he was hoping the dog... Yeah, he did stop the car.
Over, yeah.
But he was hoping the dog would, get run over. Like, wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, they make a point to focus on the bumper sticker that says, kill them all, let God sort them out.
So I'm so happy that they did that, because, like we did Tango and Cash, when they did the, we're going to visit that guy, Jabba the Hutt.
Chainsaw and beer. Yeah.
And they never fucking did it. This, getting to it, they actually delivered on it.
Right. So perfect callback at the end, yeah.
Yeah.
God, please let me run into him again. Meanwhile, he's still in sight of you. You could just, get in your car and drive over to him.
Speed up and just fucking shotgun this guy.
We don't have to have, the planets align here. Like, dude, he's right there. You could just go and meet him up. But, yeah, whatever. So, but, like, they do these, weird backstory things that really don't go anywhere. Like, the dog thing, he's... Like, as if he's going to take care of the dog. The dog's in his car the whole time. It's shitting and pissing all over his seats.
That's exactly what I thought about. When does this dog go to the bathroom?
Or eat. Like, he buys him food, but does he ever actually put it to his mouth and feed him? No.
Water,
nothing.
And just overall, what was the point of having the fucking dog in the movie? Just so they can shoehorn in that extra scene of him and that...
That's really it. You expect that thing to be like, you would expect that to like come back like,
yeah, like the dog's gonna save the day like Air Bud or
yeah.
something.
Well, yeah. No, like the guy will be shooting Seagull and the dog jumps out and bites his hand. He can't pull the trigger.
I was gonna say.
Well, you know what it really is? Seagull's like this big animal lover, and he kind of crowbars this type of stuff through in his movies once in a while.
Really?
Yeah, it's all it's about.
Okay.
It's him doing his, like, humane virtue signaling. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, justifies it, I guess.
I like when Seagal gets the phone call that they tell him Bobby Lupo has been shot in front of his wife and kids, and Gino just kind of goes, oh, my God. Like, like he just found out that the dry cleaners ruined his best suit or something. He's not like, no, no, he's just like, oh, my God.
Speaking of suits, his outfit in this movie.
Oh. Dude, that the beret.
The fucking beret.
And the sleeveless t-shirt that show his nothing arms.
Oh, yeah. When he's in the kitchen with his son, he looks like he's like from Cobra Kai. He's got that black shirt on with that deep fucking V-neck and the black pants.
Oh, my God.
He's in Cobra Kai.
He might as well have been a Terry Silver offshoot.
Yeah, like, dude.
The beret kills it for me, though. It's like he wears it, she shows up in it, and then he takes it off, and then that's it. It's only there. But it's like... How many fucking, like, there are no, like, that's like a, like, I understand, like, some aspects of, like, special forces have, like, berets that they do that. There are no levels of.
He's a green beret.
Yeah. Yeah, the Cobra Kai beret.
Yeah, the black beret.
There are no people that are wearing berets that are cops. I have, like, cops in my family. There are no one who's wearing berets.
No, dude, it's just a blowhard thing again. That's all this is. Like, he's always a blowhard. Even having the cut-off sleeveless shirt. Dude. I'm sorry, you've been famous now for like 1, 2, 3, 4 years. When are you going to work out and get those arms looking nice like Van Damme and Stallone and Arnold? Like, you wear a sleeveless shirt and you're showing off these nothing, just whatever arms. Like, it's so weird. He's so pompous and stuff, but he doesn't really have the physique to back that up. He just has the right face and hair and height, and that is it.
Right.
And moves.
I wonder if he got that beret from Clark Griswold in European Vacation.
Yeah, Rusty, when Rusty threw it, that dog, the dog is
the
one he
the
picked
dog.
Up.
That's the dog. The dog had it with him the whole time.
Seagull had to wrestle it out of the dog's mouth. So Seagull spots Richie's car, and then he proceeds to drive over 47 speed bumps.
Oh, my God.
Of this car chase.
That road was nothing but speed bumps.
It's insane. In New York, too? I don't think that's a thing.
What is he trying to get across with that? He's so hardcore, or he's so stupid. Like, it's not the quickest way from point A to B. So what are you doing? This is not efficient.
Oh, my God. When the mob boss tells his guys, you know, I want you to find Richie before the cops do and bring him to me. And the guy says, what about Gino? And he says, stay away from Gino. Leave him alone. So does that mean like Gino is like a made guy? Like he can't be touched?
His relationship in this whole movie with these mob guys is like,
yeah,
any higher up in the police force would question that immediately. Like, right. Why are you so friendly with criminals and letting them get away with that kind of stuff? But also, before we get into the butcher shop scene, the scene before that is the fucking No Sleep Till Brooklyn montage.
Oh, my
God. It's amazing.
As many times as I've seen this movie, it's wild. I forget that song pops up in here. And when that kicked in last night, dude, I got like fucking goosebumps because that fucking, that album came out.
Yes.
When I was 10 years old. And that was the biggest fucking shit going back then.
Oh, my God. It is.
Such a badass song, and it just fit that scene perfectly.
Oh, yeah, when he's driving around the vacant parking lot and those abandoned buildings with that song.
Yeah, I didn't expect it because, like, I haven't really, again, this is spotty. I've seen bits and pieces of this movie. Did not see the scene. But when I heard, as soon as I heard the fucking immediate riff, I was like,
yeah, dude.
Hell yes, let's go. On a montage of him searching throughout the city. Oh, my God. Perfect.
Yeah, but he interrupted a blowjob, dude. And that guy was right there.
And the hooker asks Gino, you want to fuck? And Gino starts laughing and asks those bums, did you hear what she said?
What'd she say?
No, man, what'd she say, man? And he don't tell him.
I guarantee you those are real homeless guys.
Well, that's the best part about this movie, and I think I'm sure this is going to be with a lot of the Seagal movies, is that it seems like there's no script for him. He's just talking.
There's two parts where I believe that.
He's just talking. And people just have to kind of riff off of whatever the fuck comes out of his mouth. Like, in this movie, it works. I'll say that.
I believe that moment. They told him, we're going to have you drive through this, go real slow, and we're not going to tell you anything. We want your natural reactions. And that's what that hooker said. And I feel like that was really him laughing. And then when he got to those guys, that's what he came up with saying to them. I think that was like a real legit surprise to him. And that's why they wanted his reaction like that.
Yeah.
To make him seem more human in this movie.
The laugh after she asked him, you want to fuck? Like, the laugh seems
genuine.
Totally genuine.
Like, yeah.
Like, he thought it was really funny.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we go to the pork store.
Yeah, the pork store. The butcher shop. The butcher knife pinning the guy's hand to the wall.
Awesome.
There's one part where, like, two guys are, like, on either side of him, and he says, come get some or something, right?
I forget what it was, but he fucks him up with a baseball bat. But the highlight of this scene for me was when he fucking hits the guy in the face with, like, the giant pepperoni or salami.
Pepperoni? Yeah. Oh, my God. Was he Michelangelo in the second Turtle movie? Combat cold cuts!
But that, no, I was surprised at how, again, how brutal this was. Because, like, the butcher, like, items, like the knife, the cleaver, they show that shit fucking those guys up.
Yeah, the guy jumps at Gino, and Gino takes that meat cleaver and buries it in that dude's leg, and then grabs it back and slams it through that guy's hand and pants to the wall.
And they show it all, and then they show even the aftermath, and it's still there. It's like I'm impressed with how fucking gory these movies were able to get away with, which is awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
Then he buys dog food and disses New Jersey for absolutely no reason. Calling it radioactive.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm sorry, is there a beef between Jersey and Brooklyn?
You've seen The Sopranos.
Yeah. Yeah. In this movie, too, what is with, like, Italian guys in, like, sporty jumpsuits?
It's the thing, but we have a Sopranos connection to this movie.
Oh, what is it?
The dad of Richie.
Right.
Is Junior Soprano. Dominic Chinese. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
I thought that was scary German guy from the Monster Squad.
Mark Margolis?
And talking about an enabler, hey, your son killed people. Well, what'd you do to make him kill him?
Oh, my God.
No, he just went. No, well, you must have. What did they do to make him kill him?
I know this is jumping ahead, but one of the things I had written down was going to your arch enemy's house, telling his parents that you're going to fucking kill him. That is ice cold.
That is the ultimate fucking baller move. Yeah. I'm going to kill your son.
Yeah.
For another what the F moment, does Richie's brother live in this pool hall bar thing? Like, is he there 24 hours a day?
So yes. it shows the mob guys talking about Richie, and one of them says, that piece of shit couldn't be a gangster if he owned New York City. Get him. So that shows that Richie is a total vigilante. The mob wants nothing to do with
him. They hate him. Yeah.
So that tells you that whatever Seagal does to Richie, he's going to have no repercussions from the mob whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because they fucking hate that guy.
And that's what I love about that is like, because like I love I wouldn't say a trope because it doesn't get done enough, is like when the mob is like, yes, this person is too fucking much even for our thing. He needs to be fucking stopped. So we'll
Yeah, like Tommy from Goodfellas.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Same thing.
Yeah.
I can't control him. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Are you telling me you want to kill Tommy? Oh, well, I didn't say. Well, I mean, I wouldn't mind. But what? It's like all the same kind of thing.
There's the scene where Richie shows up at the two Latino chicks' place. He's Rika, I haven't seen you around in a while. What'd you do, retire or something? Which insinuates that she's a hooker that he used to fuck. And she's like, I got a job at the video store.
Yeah, these two Puerto Rican girls are sitting in their house all nice, leaving everybody alone. This one younger girl seems like she's learning to read.
She's learning English, yeah.
Yeah, and she said some weird phrase that was kind of funny. Just in time. Then he comes in and he's like, hey, yeah, the video store. And, well, you won't say no to me, right?
Yeah, you wouldn't just say no to me, would you, Rika? And she starts crying. It's like,
yeah,
no, Richie. So He's either the fuck of the century or he can't even get it up. I can't tell by her reaction.
Well, her reaction is like the tears in her eyes are like coming from like, it's like probably like he's a scumbag in real life, which means he's definitely a scumbag in bed.
Right.
So it's like she knows she's about to get.
Oh, abused in some way, you know.
Yeah, so beat the fuck like, up, yeah.
And, but that's if she doesn't, as we see, she'll get fucking killed.
Right. And she don't want her or her sister to be killed.
Do you guys recognize her from anything?
She seems familiar, but I can't recall.
That's Juliana Margulies, and she became a superstar in the 90s when ER came out, that TV show.
That's funny. That's who I was thinking of.
I think this is the first thing she was ever in.
Wow.
Remember. But obviously, I don't know who the fuck she was when this came out, because she became a star once ER came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I fucking had a feeling that was her, too. That's funny.
Yeah.
His like, attempt to be Italian is really funny to me. In a good way. Like, it's just this... Because, like, William Forsythe, like, has to be from, like, the Midwest. Like, there's no way that guy's... either from the Midwest or the South.
Yeah, nothing to do with what he's portraying.
But, like, what he's portraying, like, he's hamming it up. And as are all these bit actors. And it's fucking awesome.
Right. Yeah, it's rough in this moment. Then we get to the pool hall scene where you get all these Italian guys in these weird sporty jumpsuits like Sopranos. When did that become an Italian thing? Is that just like in the I guess the eight? Well, yeah.
I think that was just a product of the times. Yeah.
Yeah.
That fucking tracksuit.
Why do they wear tracksuits though, Italians?
Comfort.
Yeah.
They're all about comfort. It's just like Hugh Hefner used to wear a bathrobe all the time. It's comfort, dude.
It's like, yeah, comfort plus, like, because you're not the guy doing the dirty work, really. They just have their little minions out there doing it. So it's like, I'm just going to...
So, like, jeans and a t-shirt just aren't their thing? They like
tracksuits. Yeah, it's like hanging out in your pajamas all day.
So Gino walks in the bar, and Vinny, who is Richie's brother, tells his henchman, I want you all to be nice and tell this big fucking Mama Luke over here anything he wants to know. And he's like, Vinny, you shouldn't talk that way. We don't know each other so good. You were still sucking your thumb when your brother was around town sucking dicks.
Amazing.
Oh.
And he's like, if my brother was here, you wouldn't talk shit like that. And this is one of my favorite lines in the whole movie. Yeah, but he's not here. And you know why he's not here? Because he's a chicken shit fucking pussy asshole. It's like Gino has Tourette's syndrome. Just strung as many profanities together as he possibly could.
I love that, though, because it's so real.
Chicken shit fucking pussy asshole.
Yeah, oh my God. That's the type of shit that I like called like my bosses at work.
And he starts walking around, you know, one by one. He's slapping the guy, and he's like, don't go pushing around my patrons, you prick, you prick.
And the best is when the bartender tries to be tough. He goes, you can't come back here. Get the fuck out of here.
Oh,
and then
God.
He just pushes him.
He's like, yeah, you got all this boxing stuff. Yeah, who's the fastest hands here? It's me. Yeah, yeah. And he just fucking gives him the people's fucking elbow. Boom. Him up immediately.
Oh, my God. He goes, I noticed a lot of boxing memorabilia. We got some gloves over here, some pictures. who's the boxer? Me.
He's like, hey, I see some boxing memorabilia here. Who the fuck is this?
And the guy's like, me. And he goes, you're the boxer? You a tough guy? And the guy goes, yeah, tough enough. And Seagal goes, really? What could you do? And the guy's like, to you? And throws a punch at Seagal. Just waste him with an elbow to the face.
Fucking
dude.
Annihilates him.
Then so he just dumb. Starts tearing up the bar, smashing beer pitchers, fucking knocking over the chip rack. Whose hot dog is this? Is it yours?
He's a complete... That's what I love about this. Like, Seagal's a fucking menace in this movie. Yeah. And it, like, lives up to the title, Out for Justice. Like, he's out to avenge his friend. He's just a... He doesn't give a fuck if he's a cop. He's a straight-up fucking lunatic in this movie, and I love it. It's amazing.
I kind of love the people in the bar, how when Seagal first walks in, and he's like... Anybody seen Richie? And they're like, fuck you.
Yeah, they
like,
just.
Anybody know why Richie did Bobby Lupo?
Yeah, the ADR scene.
If you don't have that badge and gun. If you don't have that badge and gun, how many times does that get fucking
said?
God. Oh,
God.
Meter reader coming in there. They didn't give a fuck that he was a fucking agent that had a badge around his neck. They're like, fuck you.
meter reader.
As soon as let's not forget, I know this might be when he goes back to the bar after, but him bouncing the fucking pool cue or the billiard ball. Can those bounce? I don't think they can.
A cue ball? Yeah, yeah, sure, because I've knocked him off the table.
Yeah, that shows you, like, oh, shit, he's getting ready to use that.
As, oh, when he puts it in the rag, holy shit.
He's, like, putting it in the rag and twisting it right in front of the guy, but the guy seems totally unaware of this.
The guy who's covered in tattoos, whose nickname is Tattoo. Oh, real creative.
They set it up, that main mob guy that's in the bar, keeps saying over and over, the only thing he has is that badge and gun.
Yep.
And finally, Gino's basically like, here's my badge, here's my gun, come and get it. Tell one of your fucking drools to come get it. And the guy's like, offer $5,000 for that badge right now. And those guys are like, okay. And one by one, they come at him. And one by one, they go down.
Yeah, and how about the, it's so stereotypical, the Chinese guy has to break the pool stick in half and use it as fuck.
I had in my notes, I was like, yeah, of course you have to get an Asian person to showcase Cadet Seagal's own martial arts.
Hey, Sticks, come on. So the guy shows up with two sticks.
Famous Sticks, of course.
Another real creative nickname, Sticks.
Yeah.
Just like Tattoo. Seagal's got a fucking pool cue, and they just start going at it, dude, like fucking Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker in Return of the Jedi. Just, just countering each other's move until finally Gino gets the better of him, grabs his fucking arm, twists it 180 degrees, and just fucking waste them.
Amazing. Also, I don't know if I said this earlier, but I also love that this bar seems like it's like the R-rated version of the Shredder's Hangout clan of the original Ninja Turtles movie. Seems like the exact same thing.
Yeah, they should have been playing MC Hammer there.
That's the thing, because like that place, they have the bar, they have arcade things. I'm like, this is straight up the same exact hangout as the Shredder clan from Ninja Turtles.
On East Warehouse at Laramie Island.
So that Tattoo guy, he's the first one to step up to the plate, and he's like, hey, fuckface, you want to get by me? Only two things stopping you, fear and common sense, and I'm going to cut your fucking head off. And just gets cracked in the face with that pool ball. And then it shows him spitting like four teeth out on the pool.
So many. It's like,
and then he goes back for more. Would you go back to that same guy?
You motherfucker! You knocked my teeth out. He goes, "Oh damn! I just meant to hit you in the cheekbone. I'm sorry."
It should be a bruise, not a
like if someone
knockout.
Just bashed me in the face with a pool ball. I'm out.
Yeah, stay down.
Right, and he also just beat up the guy with the sticks too. After that,
right.
So then, why would you go back for more?
And then this other guy comes out of nowhere, jumps up on the pool table, and he goes, motherfucker! And Seagal turns around and fucking, like, hits him in his dick or something.
If
you were trying to come up
punch.
On someone from behind, why would you get their attention and go, motherfucker? You would just, like, jump on him or kick him in the head or something.
How about the part where Seagal shoots his gun twice towards the ceiling? He goes, hey, man, you could have shot people up there. Yeah, but there's nobody up there, is there? Like, what the fuck was that dialogue?
Oh, yeah, no follow. It's just so, yeah, it's just.
It meant nothing. Yeah, no follow-up to it. No, there are people. Wait, what do you mean? Who's up there? You're like, nothing. Was Richie up there?
I was going to say, I can't imagine the people up there any better than the people down here.
Right, who cares, right? It doesn't matter if you shot anybody.
The guy that Gino pushes into the phone booth twice.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking standing there. He's like, he pushes him. Shuts the door.
Shuts the door on him.
And then he smashed that main guy's nose. I guess that was supposed to be like the main mob guy, at least for that little crew. That was.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah.
Gino fucking blasts him in the nose, dude.
He goes, you can't touch me.
He's like, oh, you're right. Boom! Fucking smokes him in the nose, dude.
So then we get to this really weird scene where Seagal's talking to like the Italian bosses, and he's telling them how I never liked you, and you know this, that, the other thing. I have nothing to do with you guys. I'm not involved. Blah blah. And then when one of his boys come out of the restaurant or wherever they were in, he's like, "Hey, Gino, why'd you talk to the boss like that?" And he goes on to tell him this random story about locking a guy in the trunk of a car and going to see a movie.
Yeah, when he was with his uncle and when he was 9 or something like that.
Right. And it's like, it's so confusing because Seagal's acting is so bad in this one. The way he tries to laugh back and forth. Yeah, yeah, that. Yeah, you know. Yeah, this. So then I did this. Yeah, you mean that? Yo, that's what I saw. Like, you almost think Seagal's going to go, yeah, yeah, bam, and hit him in the face or something. Because it's so disingenuine, the laughing and everything, that you think he's right about to turn on this guy. But no. After the long, pointless story, the scene just ends.
Yeah. It's weird. His relationship with these mobsters is so weird because it's like, and I think they even say this in the movie, is like, they're like, oh yeah, if you had just turned out the other way, you would have been a made guy. And he's like, yeah, but I decided not to. And it's like, okay, but you're still like you're not bringing any of these guys in despite the fact that you know they're doing illegal shit. So it's like that kind of make like, and then of course the whole impetus being his partner was dirty.
Right.
And but then he's kind of guilty of the same shit, which I think is really funny.
Right. Yeah, so at this point, we're halfway through the movie, because right after that scene, I was so mind-boggled that story about the trunk that I had to get up and, like, get a drink or something, and I paused it, and it was exactly 45 minutes in. So we're halfway through.
It's funny. This one, like we said on Above the Law, was like, that one goes on a little long. This one is only an hour and a half, but it feels so lived in that it actually, I was like, at points, I was like, how fucking long is this movie? But I was not in a bad way. I was having a great time the entire time.
It is paced better, for sure.
I would say the pace is really off. Yeah.
Like you said yesterday, Ghoul, this movie fucking cooks, man. Like, there's no downtime in this movie.
Absolutely not. Yeah, it's awesome.
There's no like weird off track storylines about illegal immigrants and like bombs and churches and like all those weird shit. Like it's stuff that we're more interested in and sticking to the point and moving forward.
That's why I love that. Like it all takes place in one day kind of movies like
24 hours.
Yeah. 48 hours, colon, Above the Law, colon, Out for Justice.
So then you get to Gina Gershon.
Oh, my God.
Richie's sister. So Seagal's looking for answers. He gets absolutely... This is honestly a total waste of time, right? I mean, the only thing he gets out of it is when he first gets there, that girl, the waitress, hands him a piece of paper that says Roxanne for whatever reason. Then he goes and harasses Gina Gershon. She calls him Nico 40,000 times. Or, what's his real... What's
Gino.
His name here? Gino. She calls him Gino 47,000 times. And he just locks her up and it goes absolutely nowhere.
I was going to say, yeah, it did nothing. Like, I think
nothing.
The idea behind that was that he was trying to protect them by locking them up, because I think he knew that like Richie was that unhinged that he was probably going to eventually kill his own fucking family. Because like if he even had the initial instinct of paranoia.
Well, he shoots the one guy in the wheelchair. Isn't he part of his family or something?
He's not a part of his family, but he's a very close, like, friend. And just because the cops show up, he assumes he's an informant, even though he wasn't. But then he says, even to his own brother, when they go back to the club, he's like, I never want to see you again. If I see you again, like, whatever. So he basically says, like, if I see you again, I'm going to kill you. So this guy will turn on his own family. So I think Seagal being close to that family is basically, like, locking them up is, like, his version of, like, protecting them from Richie being this fucking uncaged animal.
Wow.
I like when Seagal refers to that one stripper as the one whose nipples you could dial a phone with. That is such a dated reference, because he was obviously talking about a rotary dial phone.
No, you can still do it now.
Yeah.
Well, I know, but he was clearly talking about a rotary dial phone. Yeah. Some people watching this now would be like, what?
Yeah, no, these days... Her nipple could accurately hit the buttons you're looking for.
Right.
And there's one of the things I wanted to point out was, one, there's so many bit parts that we not cameos because they weren't famous then, but John Leguizamo and Raymond Cruz show up.
Yeah, Leguizamo, yeah.
Yeah. Raymond Cruz, our guy Tuco from Breaking Bad, is in the shop. But the Yeah.
Tuco. The guy in the bathtub.
I did not recognize Leguizamo or Tuco in this.
Leguizamo's quick because, like, he doesn't look as if you'd probably... Well, actually, no, that's funny because he would have already been in Die Hard 2 at this point, because this was 91,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so, so he would have already been in... Because I know he had a whole, like, subplot cut out of Die Hard 2, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Huh. Well, I'm
I'm glad you said that. So this movie, believe it or not, was near the 2-hour mark, and a lot of it was Richie, William Forsythe. They gave him a ton.
So that's my thing. Is that, like, in that montage where there's a rap song playing over everything, but all the scenes showing are muted, you see him freaking out on his guys. And I'm like, I need to hear the conversation yes. that is happening.
I want those full scenes fleshed yeah. out.
Well, Steven Seagal will not let you do that.
Nope, he won't be upstaged.
No, that's what he said. He said, yeah. This guy's literally upstaging me. I'm the star of this movie, not this fucking two-bit heavy in the movie. I'm the main guy. Why does he have so much whatever? So they literally cut almost everything away from Richie.
That makes a lot of sense, but that's fucking crazy.
Yeah,
like,
that montage is the result of it.
Wow, that makes way more sense now.
Mm-hmm.
So cool. Wow. Did you buy this on Blu-ray also?
I did, and it looks great, and I only paid $8.99 for it.
Is it the extended version with all the Richie scenes?
Fucking I wish it was, because that was the thing. I was like, god damn, like, it's just this rap song, and like, even like the scene.
Yeah, that fucking rap song, dude. What the fuck?
Even the during that, you get the police raids, you get what's his name, you get Seagal talking with Jerry Orbach. I would love to hear that conversation even. But then they show this one scene. It's like 30 seconds of Richie freaking out on the people in the car. And I'm like,
right.
Yeah, I need to hear what the fuck that was on about, because yeah. that, oh my god.
Well, instead, you're listening to Shake the Firm by Cool JT and David Michael Frank.
I knew it was a fucking knockoff. Like, they shelled out all the money for Beastie Boys, so any needle drops they'd had were just going to be, like, discount.
Cool JT. Shake the Firm.
Cool JT. Wow. Yeah, I don't have that CD on my wall.
Oh, my God. Yes.
When I heard that, all I thought of was Turtle Power from the first Ninja Turtles movie.
T-U-R-T-L-E, power.
You would have thought they could have doubled down on the Beastie Boys on that, especially since, like, that being... You even had Paul's Boutique. Actually, yeah, Paul's Boutique was already out by this point. You could have ripped something off of there that could have fit if you're going to go with the Beastie Boys. We could afford them. Jesus Christ, stick with it.
Yeah, so Seagal finds coke, money, sex pictures, and Bobby's desk. Now, these sex pictures are out of this world. They are having sex. They're in the throes of sex. And somehow, either they're taking selfies with a Polaroid. Yeah, they're like, he's inside of her.
No, I think it's funny. You put it so uniquely, the throes of sex.
Yeah, the throes of passion. Like, they are involved here, and someone's taking a picture and asking them to say cheese or what, but I've never seen two happier people to get their picture taken while they're having sex. And everything about it. Her hair is out of this world. She is scary looking.
She's 80s. Yeah, she's got that 80s look. Like, it's just through and through.
He is bizarre looking.
Like I said, as many times as I've seen this movie, I guess I just never hyper-focused on that Polaroid like I did last night when they showed their fucking expressions. Like, they were...
his face is hilarious.
And she looks like she could not have been happier, man.
Yeah, like they
she was having the time of her fucking life.
It's insane.
So Seagal rambles on with another boring story to his ex about sharpening scissors. Like, I'm like, dude.
The only part in this movie where I was like, all right, let me look at my phone now.
Oh, yeah.
That was like, it.
And, you know, his ex, what do you think of her look? She looks like Lady Gaga if Lady Gaga was sort of pretty.
I was going to say, no, she's not
I
bad.
Was going to say, yeah, she's actually, in my opinion, very attractive also, just like Sean.
I wouldn't be divorcing her, let me tell you that much.
Well, he didn't. I think he goes back at the
That's
end.
True, yes, he does, but yeah.
But yeah, I wouldn't even attempt it.
Yeah.
No, she's hot, dude.
So Richie's boys surround her house, and Seagal fucking caps every single one of these people. It is amazing. He throws one of the guys off the fire escape, but
oh my god! Oh, what are you gonna do? I don't have a gun. You gonna kill an unarmed guy? And then he fucking just throws him off. I'm like, yeah, fuck you, buddy.
It was cool though. Like, it was really well done, well shot. Like, Seagal look badass, like blowing every one of the guys away who like creeped around each window?
He shoots so many people in the fucking throat in this movie. Like, yeah.
At least two that I saw.
Yeah, and I'm like, that's like a brutal, like, you don't see that very often. And he showcases it. The brutality with this one, again, it's awesome. Like, I really love that they got away with, like, doing this shit. Because, like, a throat shot, I feel like, is, that's tough to.
Oh, it's rough.
At the MPAA, but they got away with it. It's really good.
I like a little before that when the mob guys show up at the pool hall and they start to fuck with Vinny. And some old guy with glasses and a mustache walks up and starts manhandling Vinny. Vinny's such a puss. I mean, like, that would be like, he already got his ass kicked by Mike Tyson in the Steven Seagal scene. And then someone like fucking George Burns walks in there and starts slapping you around. And you're just like, like, he's like crying like a bitch and stuff.
It's amazing though. I love that all these bit parts, like, they eat up that, like, Italian Goomba stereotype so much. Like, even like people that don't even have any other role, like it, like when they go and visit Richie's brother, what's his name, Nicky, again in the thing, and he's already all fucked up, and they're like, oh, you come back, I'll kill you. And then this other guy who's off to the side for the entire scene, they give him a solid 30 seconds to just, like, all right, strut your stuff. And he's like, we'll come back, we'll fucking kill you. It's like, yeah. All right, well, the two other guys before you just said that, so thanks for reiterating that. I just love it. Just feels very lived in and, like, honest. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they all saw Hard to Kill and Mark for Death. They're like, yeah, wow, we're going to be in a Seagal movie. I'm making the most of this.
Yeah, I've seen Goodfellas. Let me do this.
Yeah.
And then Richie shows up at the pool hall fucking with his brother. Like, literally everyone in this fucking town is showing up to fuck with Vinny, the bartender. Richie's grabbing him by dick, pinching his fucking broken nose, slapping him around. Vinny's like, just fucking crying like some fucking 3-year-old.
Yeah, and it just, again, showcases how much of a piece of shit William Forsythe is. Like,
yeah, Rich's own family. Stop whining like a fucking cunt and get your piece.
Yeah. Wants him to gun these fucking guys down. It's like, where do you think you're going to go from this? And it's just like, just insanity. But just like, again, him also smoking crack at least twice in this movie, they show him. It just further proves, like, yeah, this guy's fucking unhinged. But like, to be like, yeah, to your own brother, I don't want to see you again.
Don't
ever let me fucking see you again. It's like, holy shit, this guy's a fucking scumbag.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then he goes and kills all the Italian guys that are now looking for him. He shoots them on the stairs. He goes, where is he? He goes, I'm right here.
And then I love how the tattoo, as we'll call him, it commits to their side immediately. Like, he's supposed to be the brother's, like, right-hand man, and then immediately he's in with Richie's crew.
Oh, yeah. Like, execute those mob guys, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's even there at the hooker's house later on.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's where we see Kane Hodder. So yep. Kane Hodder is sitting on a couch. He's got a red jacket on. It's real quick, but it's Kane Hodder.
He's there, and then he eventually, you see him quick again. He's one of the guys who gets shot. He tries to shoot Seagal. He tries to shoot him, and he gets blasted fucking real quick.
And for anyone listening right now, if you don't know who Kane Hodder is, please turn this off.
No, there might be people who don't know because they just are listening to a Seagal review. Yeah.
He played Jason Voorhees in Friday the 13th, 7 through 10.
Yeah. We see all that crap. We see Roxanne. She's dead. So imagine, like, when they were casting her, she's like, all right, well, you're going to take a bunch of really weird pictures sexually with some guy that we're going to pick. Then you're going to be a dead hooker in a bed, and you're not going to say or do anything in this movie. What do you think? Sure. Like, so weird, right? Like, that's her big role here.
It's funny, too, because, like, Seagal goes and, like, goes to the scene and then sees, like, that it's, like, she has the Polaroids all thrown about her, and then he covers her with a sheet. But he's already, like, called the cops to come and investigate it. I'm like, you're, like,
totally tampering. You're tampering with the whole thing.
Why would you? He's all. What can I say? He's out for justice.
He is, and nothing's. Yeah. So Richie goes back to the Puerto Rican chick's house for more sex and to hide out. And he goes on about this is my last night, my last night. So even from the garage, when he killed the poor dude who hasn't gotten his dick hard since 1969 in the wheelchair, even from that point, he keeps referring to, like, this him being his last night. Like, he knows he's going for broke. He's just going to do a bunch of things that he knows will lead to his inevitable death. And it's all triggered by Bobby sleeping with his girlfriend and that other waitress. Like, he was banging that other waitress. As much as we made fun of him, he has both those girls and his wife.
Yeah.
So, but, like, I don't understand the motivation of Richie, but then you'll say, oh, well, he's smoking crack. But it's like, yeah, but would he just start smoking crack this week? Wasn't he always like this, or when did this start?
People, because, like, I mean, I'm sure we all can speak from experience. We all know a guy like Richie, someone who's, like, erratic, crazy, and all it's going to take is one little thing to fucking just set them off, and they're just going to go on a warpath of, like, just doing crazy shit.
It's worth dying over, though? I don't know. It's weird.
I mean, if you're in that lifestyle, I absolutely can see it.
And he was so fucked up on crack at that point.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't give a fuck about anything.
Even him, like we said, killing that fucking poor lady in the middle of traffic. Like, that just shows, like, he's just does the middle of day, like, he just does not give a fuck.
Yeah, there's nothing there, right?
Yeah, so he's just basically like, yeah, like, we're going to do this. We're going to kill everyone. We're going to take this, like, that stash that he had in the beginning, and we're going to get the fuck out and basically start his own kind of business, I guess, elsewhere, is what his intention probably was. But when you have an erratic, lunatic psychopath like that, it's just, yeah, you're just basically going till you die.
Like, Seagal shoots that guy's leg off at the kneecap.
Oh, my God.
Just like fucking Chucky at the end of the first shot. And the guy's like, oh, you motherfucker.
Oh, God, that's the best part. Oh, when his leg comes apart. Oh, God.
It's like the brutality and the viciousness and the gore in this movie is really good. It delivers.
Yeah, dude.
Awesome.
Yeah. And I like how the kid who sold him the seltzer waters, you know, because Seagal drinks seltzer water. That's how he got in such great shape. He tells him, my ex-hooker, he was banging that Puerto Rican girl. And he goes, my ex-hooker, I think Richie's at that house. And he gives him the tip off. And yeah, it's when he goes and blows his leg in half. But so we get to this, once he, like, starts going after these guys, he gets to the weird kill where, like, the guy whose teeth he knocked out, he kicks him into, like, a brick wall, and he starts making all these weird sounds. Did you notice that?
I think it's supposed to be, like, he kicked him so hard that, like, he bashed his head into the brick wall, and then
and
like...
And that's how he died?
Yeah, something like that. That's at least what I took away from it.
This is what I have in my notes. I have... Tattoo says, fuck you, cop, and Gino kicks him in the stomach, and he's instantly dead.
Right,
just from
a
kick in the stomach, he's done.
He's dead. It's bizarre. So, not much happens here in that sense. Like, you know, we got everything we talked about, those types of kills, but then he gets to Richie pretty quickly. You know, shoot the hooker, ex-hooker tells him that he's in the bathroom or whatever. He shoots it up, and then the guy, Richie, comes out with a gun to his head, looking like Hitler about to kill himself after he shot his wife, Eva Braun. He says he was going to kill him, and there's nothing in the gun, and he goes, too bad, because those bullets would have saved you a lot of pain.
It's kind of badass.
Oh, that's great. And he throws him into everything he could find in the house, just like that bodega in the other
movie.
Dude,
he is throwing him around like a fucking rag doll, dude.
Oh, God. Everything. Richie just keeps on picking up things that will eventually be used to hurt him.
Frying pan.
You're so fucked up off of just, like, drugs and booze and being in pain. What makes you think that your reflexes are going to outdo this guy's?
Yeah, this,
like,
guy.
Like, no matter what weapon you pick up.
Right. When he picked up the frying pan, I thought he was going to fry himself up a last meal because he knew he was going to die, and he's a big fat fuck.
He's going to fry
and
up
then,
pepper,
and then Gino
the guy got hit in the face with.
Gino throws the fastest three-punch combination I've ever seen in my life on Richie.
Oh, my God. It's fucking... Oh. It's beautiful.
Oh, my God. And then he takes the corkscrew.
I did not expect, because, like, I love how they show the mob guys pulling up right as he reaches for the corkscrew. Because I'm like, oh, it's going to turn into Richie's going to be alive. The mom guy's going to bust in. Richie's going to be alive. And then Seagal's going to be there. So they're going to have to, like, basically battle who gets to kill this fucking guy. That's what I was expecting. I wasn't expecting the quick, like, facepalm with the fucking corkscrew right into his fucking skull. Oh.
Hey, Ted? Hey, where the hell's the corkscrew?
Oh man, that was amazing. He should have stuck it in his eye though, more than the forehead.
Yeah, right in the forehead. Yeah, the eye would have been much more.
Then he grabs the gun and fires like three rounds into Richie's corpse.
Italian guy's gun. Yeah.
Good night. Exit stage left. I'm out.
Yeah, I hate this fucking guy. Bang 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 bang.
Now, what about the fact that like Seagal doesn't seem to ever let it be anything but a one-sided fight? What do you guys think of that? Like, because, like, Richie didn't do anything to him.
No, it's because Seagal's so fucking egotistical at this point in his career, at least in Above the Law, when he was, you know, in that chair, zip-tied or whatever, and he had the, you know, the bloody face, he got worked a little bit. But by this time, he's like, no, nobody's getting the better of me.
The only damage he takes is that...
The one time he got shot.
To the chest, and then they only play on that when in the initial stages of the final fight when Richie, like, plugs his finger into it. But they don't even play on that very much.
No.
It's just like, yeah, like you said, Chris, it's like he's so egotistical. Like, his character just cannot be harmed. He has to be Superman.
No one's better than him.
He doesn't want anybody from the public to perceive him as having any type of weakness whatsoever.
Absolutely, yeah.
Even though it's a fucking movie.
Yeah, right. It's like, Jesus Christ. Like, because, like, this one, honestly, this movie should have ended in a fucking, like furnace, like, foundry type fucking setting.
Yeah.
It would have just made more sense. Like, but, yeah, no.
It ends in a kitchen.
Yeah, ends in a kitchen.
He said, I'll kill you in your own kitchen.
Is that like the ultimate fuck you to someone? I'll kill you in your own kitchen.
It's not even his own kitchen, though. It's his girlfriend's.
Oh, yeah.
It's a hooker's kitchen.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, it still works, though. But I guess it works, too, because I guess if you want to get deep into it, it's like, works because, like, Richie's like a cockroach piece of shit. He, not even people in his own mob like him.
Right.
So it makes sense that, like, a guy like that who goes down going in a whole day doing, like, crazy shit. Because he even says that he's like, oh, we're making history. Like, we're going to go down in history as, like, this, whatever. That's all he wanted was to be, like, a legacy. Imagine your legacy being ended in, like, you got killed in a hooker's kitchen. It's, like, a huge fuck you, you know? So I guess it just works.
Well, yeah, I mean, we got to go to the boardwalk scene with him and his wife, and he's wearing that sweet beret again.
So happy they delivered on that, because when he says, as we spoke upon earlier in Tango and Cash, when he said, oh, we got to revisit Jabba the Hutt with a chainsaw, and they never do, this one, when he's like, I pray to God I run into that guy, and he fucking does.
You see the bumper sticker that says, kill them all, let God sort them out, and Seagal is like, oh shit, that's that guy, and he's like, hey, yo, fuck nuts, and the guy's like, you talking to me? And he's like, you wouldn't be the guy who threw a puppy at the car or a puppy out of his car the other day. What's your fucking business anyway? And he's like, I'm an animal lover. And that's fucking old guy's like, look, asshole, you don't start minding your fucking business, I'll stuff you in a fucking plastic bag and throw you out a fucking window.
<That's> amazing. Tough guy. And then he kicks the shit out of him, and then fucking the dog pisses on him.
Yeah, pisses in his mouth.
Ugh.
That, oh my God. I never realized how funny that was until last night. The dog walking over to the guy, pissing in his mouth.
In his mouth. Straight up.
Gino kicks him in the balls. The guy's like, my balls! is that what you would say if someone just smoked you in the nuts? My balls!
I wouldn't be vocalizing any words.
Yeah, no, exactly. I'd be on the ground.
Yeah, like, the other weird scene is that it's when they go to an Italian restaurant. The guy goes, I see you still cut your hair like a fucking girl. Or you still comb your hair like a...
That's the same guy who's the one who is in the bar, who's the...
Oh, that's him?
That's the... Yeah, Badge and Gun, because he makes a comment. He's like, oh, you play for both sides. He's like, says whatever.
Wow.
Yeah, but I...
Yeah, I'm surprised to go let anyone say something like that.
Yeah, you can't even talk shit to him.
No.
Let alone physically assault him.
Right. It's really out of character.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, we can talk about this off air, but, like, some of the shit I read about Stallone behind the scenes on some of the movies we did, yikes. Yeah, you couldn't even look at that guy, otherwise he'd be pissed. It's fucking psychotic.
If you see him coming, you look down at the ground. Okay, how many hookers are we punching in the face out of five for Out for Justice, Chris?
This is by far and away my favorite Seagal movie. It's got everything. It's got, the pacing is incredible. The fight scenes are incredible. It doesn't have that over-the-top shootout explosion stuff that was kind of a turnoff to me as a kid. I am going to give this a very strong 4.5.
Oh my God.
4.5 hooker punches out of 5.
Wow. So what's the last one? Like a backhand?
So it's four right crosses to the face and then a very solid body blow.
She might be pregnant. You sure you want to do that?
Well, that's even more reason.
Nah, dude, he said punch the baby,
dude. Holy shit.
Wow. Punch the baby. Okay. The ghoul. How many hookers are you punching in the face out of 5 for Out for Justice?
Okay, so this was, again, spotty for me for Seagal. But I had a really fucking fun time. This was a solid fucking movie. I enjoyed it a lot. Didn't expect much going into it, but it takes off right from the start and does not fucking stop, which I love. I love the contained to 24 hours storyline. Like, you can't go wrong with that kind of thing. And his character is very likable, despite knowing who
he... Despite boring people with stories. I thought when he was telling his ex-wife the story about the scissors that she was going to go, you know, this is why I left you, Gina. These boring stories.
No, I was like, his characters are very likable, despite him being a fucking lunatic.
Right.
And I loved that all the bit part actors are just given 100% diving into these roles, so it makes it feel very lived in. And it seems like it could be corny, but it really isn't. 4.5 out of 5 for me.
Jesus!
Yes!
I really like this one a lot.
2 in a row.
I really fucking like this one. This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, so it's weird because my big movies with Seagal are the two before this. Now, I never even thought of his movies as like when they came out or anything. Like, I didn't put much thought into it. Like, oh, so this is next. Mark for Death was cool, so this is next. And try to lump it in with the other two. I never did that, and I never thought of him as, like, anything like that.
You mean as, like, in it, so he did this, and now he's onward to this, and then, like, a progression, you're saying?
Like, you know, this movie was so good, I can't wait to see his next one.
Right,
or something
okay,
like that.
Yeah. Okay.
So then, and then saying, oh, so this is all in the same time frame.
But now, did you see these back when they came out, or were you much older by the time you started watching these?
Mm-mm. These were new movies when I was watching them.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
My family, they used to rent videos from the video store and then dub them at home.
Yeah,
and then
these would be
yeah, these would be like that's our collection. And this was there. It was Hard to Kill. And no, I don't know if this was there. That's the problem. It was Hard to Kill and Marked for Death, and that is it. My dad, I guess, didn't follow it that hard and then keep doing this.
Okay, so you have those deep nostalgic ties to those two movies.
To those
then.
Two. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That's how I am with this one.
Okay, yeah. So like I don't see it the way you guys do. I do recognize that it's good and I like Seagal anyway, and I like his prime anyway. So I'm all for this, but I will just give it a modest 4 out of 5 hookers punched in the face.
Dude, that's awesome. A great rating. Awesome.
Awesome. I love that.
Yeah. Like, I think your nostalgia gives you that other 0.5, and I'm sure I would, too.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
I practically just watched the thing for the first time, and I fucking loved it.
Wow, good. That's even better. That's great. It's always great when you watch them for the first time, and it's so good to you that it's a new favorite.
Right.
That makes worth doing a podcast alone, you know?
I would pay $50 for this Blu-ray.
Well, I have it. I'll sell it to you for $50.
Yeah, and I'll go buy another $8 one.
I have the Blu-ray. It's only cost me $8.99. It's okay.
Oh, man. Oh, well. Well, let me know if there's anything else you want. I got a ton of $50 Blu-rays.
I do have... I remember I won the Skeleton Crew some giveaway where I got the Lost Boys 2 The Tribe from you.
Wow! I don't remember that. That's amazing.
That was fucking like 12 years ago.
When we get done recording, I'm going to take this dog, drive down the street, and throw out the fucking window.
The dog's name, too? Garaccio. Like, the most, like, Italian fucking thing. I again, being half Italian, I absolutely love the Ginzo stereotypes.
Are you're half Italian?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know
that's
that.
Why he looks like the guy from Bronx Tale.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, Bronx Tale. Dude, yeah. That's a banger, dude.
Yeah, he looks like that guy with the nose, but not your nose. Your nose is okay. Well, that was it, guys. So there will be definitely more Seagull to come. You can rest assured we will review Hard to Kill and Mark for Death. But for now, we'll see you next week.
Peace!